Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here this evening. We got chapter 42. We began it last week, and as I was looking at this, it's just going to be nicer, easier, I think, if we just read through these. I'll make comments as we're going. I feel bad because Sunday we read through Revelation chapter by chapter, and last night we read a bunch out of Matthew. And now tonight we're going to read four chapters here, so there's not much Bible teaching going on, just reading. And I'll make comments. But it's just a storyline, and I want to see how it flows together. So we're on your notes, on the top of the page right there, I did this. I took one of the charts and cropped it from my website. And you've got that middle gray part of the sons. You got the four wives of Jacob, Zilpah, Leah, Rachel, and Bilhah. And then Leah has the first four sons, Reuben, Simeon, and Levi, Judah. And then Rachel gives her handmaiden to Jacob, and there's Dan and Naphtali is born. And then Leah had stopped having children, so she gives her handmaiden Zilpah, and Gad and Asher is born. Then Leah has another son, Issachar, Zebulun, and then Rachel gets pregnant and has Joseph, the 11th son, and then Benjamin to round it up. So that's you understand that. Over on the left side of that chart, this is the birth order, straight down, and then the age that they would be in Genesis chapter 42 and 43. Now, we know how old Joseph was. Joseph was 39. We can tell that from the text. And then you got to kind of figure out how old all the other ones were. And first of all, Benjamin, I just placed Benjamin 5 years younger than Joseph. There's no reason for that. But he's definitely not, younger than 22, because Joseph's been gone for that many years. He left when he was 17, and Benjamin was already born. So you kind of figure that out. So I figure if he's 5 years younger, if you want to adjust that to 10 years younger, then he's 29. And the same way going up, you can kind of figure how old they are. Reuben would be right around 50 years old. He could be 52, 53. He could be 48. And then you've got the order of the birth, but it'd be easy if you just had one wife with 12 children. I mean, she's giving birth every, 14 to 24 months. But when you've got four women giving birth, that's why I've got some of them, because the competition was going on between Leah and Rachel, that, Dan, number five, and Judah, number four, could be very similar in age, and then Leah gives Zilpah, so now Gad and Asher could double up with the age of some of Naphtali and Dan. And so I've got their ages 50, 49, 48, 47, 46, 45, 45, 46, 44, 42, and then Joseph at 39. The only one there that is really non-negotiable scripturally is Joseph, and then the rest of it is kind of just a framework of where you're putting it in. On the right side of that chart, just so we kind of, the characters that pop up in the story, Reuben was the one who planned to rescue Joseph from the pit. All the brothers wanted to kill Joseph. Now, all the brothers, who are all the brothers? Some of them were wanting to kill him, but Reuben was one of the brothers that thought, well, we'll throw him in a pit, let him starve to death, and then I'll come back and set him free. So Reuben was not one of them that wanted to kill him. When he's in the pit, then Judah is the one who suggests that they sell him to the caravan. Now, was Judah trying to spare his life, or was Judah trying to just make some money? But Judah's the one that ended up sending him into Egypt. And then Simeon comes up in our story, as you saw last week. And there's nothing that we know about Simeon and the interaction he had with Joseph. As we said, Jewish tradition has him being, an enemy of Joseph. But that's tradition. That's maybe nothing more than simply that Simeon was the one pulled out and kept by Joseph. It must mean he didn't like him and is trying to pay him back. But you see no vindictiveness in Joseph. So it's hard to say he kept Simeon because Simeon was his enemy. That doesn't make sense, because there'd be a whole different story here. He'd be dividing his brothers, delivering two or three of them, executing a couple of them. And he's like, his name of Manasseh and Ephraim, he's forgotten his father's household. He knows he's blessed. He's forgotten the trouble of the past, and he's just glad. And in fact, he's fulfilling the dreams of his brothers all coming and bowing down, all of them, and then the whole family coming and bowing down, meaning Joseph has a place, and he may be following those dreams, just like he used the dream to decide how to behave in Pharaoh's household. We need to start storing food. He's using these dreams. How is this going to come? Here's what's supposed to happen, and Joseph now is going to, you know, do certain things to cause this to happen until all the brothers are there to bow down, and then the whole family's there to bow down, and he will save the family because God has destined him for it. It's his job to make it happen, not get vengeance. So that's kind of the information there. So now we've got chapter 42. I'm going to begin reading in my Bible. We've got the notes right there. We've heard a couple of the things. Chapter 42, verse 1. When Jacob learned that there was grain for sale in Egypt, he said to his sons, "Why do you look at one another?" And that we looked at that last week with the Hebrew. The word ra there appears to be coming out and facing each other like in a battle formation without taking action. Why do you look at each other? And that's what the sons are doing. One thing that we can clear up tonight, there's been 7 years of famine and then or plenty, and now there's been 1 year of the famine. And then there's going to be this second year is when they come to get food. And that first year, if they came during the first year for food, that's possible. I suggest that they used what they had and ran out of food the second year. But if we do that, they're going to come the first time and the second time in the second year. Because when he finally reveals himself to his brothers, he says this is the second year of the famine, and there are 5 years left. So when he reveals himself to his brothers, it's right here at the end of the second year. So if they came, we don't know for sure, they may have came, you know, late in the first year and then come back later in the second year, but they're running out of food, and it is still the second year. So that's kind of, this is your second 7 years of famine. And I had said last week, it would seem like it'd have to be the second year that they're coming for food. But then they go home, eat all their food, run out, and Jacob doesn't want to go back and get any, and it's still the second year. Because when they finally go back with Benjamin, it's still the second year. So these trips are all taking place sometime during the first 2 years. I've got to kind of squeeze into the second year, which seems like maybe they came later in the first year. It's not detailed for sure. Page 2 of the notes. And he said, "Behold, I have heard that there is grain for sale in Egypt. Go down, buy grain for us there, that we may live and not die." So 10 of Joseph's brothers went down to buy grain in Egypt, but Jacob did not send Benjamin, Joseph's brother, with his brothers, for he feared that harm might happen to him. Now his favorite two sons are Joseph and Benjamin, because his favorite wife is Rachel, and he's already lost Joseph, and he's lost Rachel, and all he's got for his, you know, his fond childhood memories or his love of his youth is his youngest son, Benjamin. Thus, the sons of Israel came to buy among the others who came, for the famine was in the land of Canaan. Now, there's a map right there that just kind of tying this together. We're going to use this for the rest of the book. It shows you where, if you remember, first of all, start at the very bottom left, Bar Yosef. That's the River Joseph, or the Joseph Canal. That appears to have been cut by Joseph to help water and create this oasis there. That's the Fayum Oasis and the Dashur, the plentiful grass there. In fact, that's when, we've talked about it, Senwosret, same time period, he moves from the Gaza area there, or Giza area, where all the pyramids are, where the king tombs, the tombs of the kings, and he moves down to Lahun, which is basic Egyptian knowledge, history, and it's right there by that oasis, so he moves down in that area. So I would think that is the area Pharaoh's at, Joseph's canal is there, and there's an oasis which with storage units built there. That is probably where this story's taking place, where Joseph is at. Then you go back up to the land of Canaan, and there's two main cities. Hebron is where Jacob and his sons are living in that area. When Jacob finally comes to Egypt, with his sons to meet see Joseph again. He's going to stop at Beersheba and offer a sacrifice, and God is going to speak to him at Beersheba and tell him, go down, I'll be with you in the land of Egypt. And then they'd follow the line down and then pass on that, you know, the east side of the Nile River. At some point, they're going to cross over. I will make this note that at the very bottom of the page, bottom left, Beni-Hassan, in the tomb of Beni-Hassan there, they have that inscription or that mural of Hebrew people with the dress, the hair, the culture on a tomb in Beni-Hassan on that east side of the Nile. So they were familiar with travelers from Canaan back in this time period. And so that's why I just got it coming down. For sure, if we're not for sure where Joseph is at, but we are sure where Jacob is at and where they would have traveled. And as when they actually meet Joseph and he reveals himself, he says, I'm going to give you the land of Goshen. Pharaoh says, give them the best land, and that is the land of Goshen. You can see it up there by Ramses, that it was a city that we can talk about in Exodus, that was built by Ramses, who was the Pharaoh 1250 BC later on, but he named the city Ramses after himself, and it was a store city. But that city was already there in Moses' time. It was just renamed, and it was a contemporary name that people could be familiar with. But anyway, that's Ramses in the land of Goshen, and that's where Joseph, that's where this is, this tomb, this statue was, and this remains this tomb, and at Avaris, that's in the land of Goshen, and that's all leading towards where they're at. Nonetheless, that map is going to be useful because that's kind of down there by Lahun, and the oasis, and Joseph's canal is probably, well, we know that's where Senrosret's at because he moved his palace down there and he built his pyramid down there, and Joseph is apparently working for Senrosret as the head of the land. Okay, next page, page 3, chapter 42, verse 6. Now Joseph was governor over the land. He was the one who sold to all the people of the land, and Joseph's brothers came and bowed themselves before him with their faces to the ground. Joseph saw his brothers and recognized them, but he treated them like strangers and spoke roughly to them. Where do you come from? He said. They said, from the land of Canaan to buy food. And again, there's all the dates I've got in there of how old they were. Chapter 42, verse 8, and Joseph recognized his brothers, but they did not recognize him because he looks like an Egyptian. He's shaved. He's got the clothes on. He's got, like we said last week, he's using an interpreter. And Joseph remembered the dreams, and that's important. Joseph, now how do I act? How do I act with these brothers? And his guidance was the dreams. I had these dreams that he had dreamed of them, and he said to them, you are spies. You have come to see the nakedness of the land. They said to him, no, no, my lord. Your servants have come to buy food. We're here to buy food. We are sons of one man. We are honest men. Your servants have never been spies. Now, they may have never been spies, but they are not honest men. So they are honestly not spies, but they do have a shady past, and they know that. But they're definitely not spies. But Joseph is setting the stage for his dreams to come to pass. He said to them, no, no, that's not the case. It is the nakedness of the land that you've come to see. You've come to see where we are weak. Again, if it's military, if it's economics, if it's the border, you're here spying on us. I don't trust you. And he says, we, your servants, now here's them telling their story. We are 12 brothers. Which is interesting because they're only 11 brothers. One of them they think is dead, but they still see themselves as a group of 12. 12 brothers, the sons of one man in the land of Canaan. And behold, the youngest is this day with our father, and one is no more. But Joseph said to them, it is as I said, you are spies. Now he's got a plan, or he's making the plan as he's going. He's holding the line, you're spies, I'm very suspicious of you. He says, by this you shall be tested. By the life of Pharaoh, you shall not go from this place unless your youngest brother comes here. I'm going to put you in jail, put you in custody, hold you here until your brother comes, and then I'm going to start asking him questions. And I'll interrogate him, cross-examine him, see if his story matches your story, and I'll find out that you are spies. On the third, okay, and he put them all together in custody for 3 days. He didn't divide them up. He let them sit together and talk, and they're in some kind of prison, some kind of custody. They can't leave, and they're trying to figure out their fate. On the third day, Joseph said to them, "Do this and you will live, for I fear God. I'm a man of integrity. I fear God. I've reconsidered my options here." And he probably has. He's probably put them away, and because this wasn't something he necessarily had planned out, because he didn't know his brothers were going to show up and ask for food. So he may have taken this 3 days to kind of formulate some kind of a strategy on what can I do, and probably being led by those two dreams, meaning these are my responsibility, not just to take care of the land for the first 7 years and the second 7 years, but it's my responsibility to make sure these dreams are fulfilled. And he's in the right place. He's in the place where it's going to be very, they're already ready to bow down to him. Give us food. On the third day, Joseph says, "Do this and you'll live, for I fear God. If you are honest men, let one of your brothers remain confined where you are in custody, and let the rest go and carry grain for the families of your household." Now, this is going to be repeated by the brothers to their father Jacob, and this word confined is a little bit harsher than the word that they're going to use, and I'll show you that in the Hebrew here in a moment. Chapter 42, verse 20, "And bring your youngest brother to me. I'll keep one of you here. You go and then bring your brother back, and I'll let the other brother go out of custody. So your words will be verified, and you shall not die." What's on the table here is life or death. If you're lying to me, you die. If you can prove that you're telling the truth, I'll let you live. So this is not about fines or penalties or, you know, some kind of tariffs on Canaan. It's like, I will kill you if you're lying to me. So that's what they're going back to Canaan with, the threat over their heads. If we go back and we fail, he'll kill us. "Then they said to one another, 'In truth, we are guilty concerning our brother, in that we saw the distress of his soul when he begged us and we did not listen. That is why this distress has come upon us.'" Now, they're speaking, and it's interesting. It is amazing that they go back some 22 years. I mean, if something happens today in my life, is my first thought, yep, 22 years ago. It's like if something happens today, I may be thinking about what I did right now, or the situation, or something that happened last week, but I certainly don't go back unless it's a major event. 22 years ago, I sold my brother into slavery. That's why we're out of food, and I'm having trouble getting food in Egypt. But all the brothers looked at each other, and all of them go back. It wasn't one of them says, "You know, I'm starting to remember. Remember we sold Joseph?" It's like all of them look at each other. I mean, it's been hanging over their heads this whole time. "And Reuben answered them, 'Did I not tell you not to sin against the boy? But you did not listen, so now there comes a reckoning for his blood.'" Reuben says, "I'm innocent because I was the one telling you, you can't act this way." Very interesting that Reuben brings it up, and they don't argue with him in the narration here. Sounds like that's exactly, he's the one that wanted to get Joseph. He convinced him to throw him in a cistern, and he was planning on setting him free. "They did not know that Joseph understood them, for there was an interpreter between them." So they think they're just talking amongst themselves, as we know, because they think Joseph's an Egyptian. He speaks only Egyptian, and he's using an interpreter this whole time. Not until the very end will he not be using an interpreter. Chapter 42, verse 24, "Then he turned away from them and wept," and it's going to happen a couple more times, "and he returned to them and spoke to them, and he took Simeon from them and bound him before their eyes." So they got to see Simeon get put in shackles or handcuffs or something, however the Egyptian did it, and taken away. And that's where Simeon is taken, and we do not know why Simeon was chosen. Like I said, Jewish tradition was he was the meanest of the brothers. He picked on him more than the other brothers. I don't know if that's the case. That may be reading back into the story because Simeon was stolen. Or Simeon was taken. What I said last week, I'm going to stand with, that it could be he's sending a message to Jacob, because Simeon is the second son of Leah, and they're negotiating for the second son of Rachel, that why would he pick Simeon? Because, again, they're both second sons. Again, we don't know for sure. That's a guess. Chapter 42, 25, "And Joseph gave orders to fill their bags with grain and to replace every man's money in his sack and to give them provisions for the journey. This was done for them." So they purchase the grain, they load their grain up, tons of grain, as much as they can carry. Then they put the money back in the sacks. When they open the grain up, there's their money they were supposed to pay for. And then he gave them provisions for the trip so they don't have to use their grain. And as one of them opened his sack, chapter 42, verse 27, to give his donkey fodder at the lodging place, he saw his money in the mouth of his sack. Oh, no. He said to his brothers, "My money has been put back. Here it is in the mouth of my sack." And at this their hearts failed them, and they turned trembling to one another, saying, "What is this that God has done to us? This is the fate. Somehow our money's back in." That he accuses of being spies, of trying to find the weakness in the land, and now we've stolen the grain from the land. And you can have a court case, you can do all the talking you want, provide the defense and the evidence, but the fact remains, you got your money back. You ripped off Egypt, and it's not just you made a mistake or you ripped off Egypt. This guy's already threatened to kill all of you. When they came to Jacob, their father, now they don't go back. They're kind of hoping. They don't know the famine's going to last for another, 5 years. They're probably hoping, we don't have to go back. And they're probably thinking, Simeon, it's like, well, we lose one or we lose all of us. It's like it's not worth going back. When they came to Jacob, their father, in the land of Canaan, they told him all that had happened to them, saying, and now if you read this, you can see how they're rewording it, they're softening it, they're avoiding certain things, they're not saying certain things. But one thing for Jacob, Jacob, is there was a time they were away in the land but by Dothan, and when they came back from Dothan, like 22 years ago, they came back and they all had extra money, and they'd lost one of their brothers. Now they come back from Egypt and they've all got extra silver, but they've lost one of their brothers. And Jacob has got to be putting two and two together and thinking, it seems like every time you guys go away, you lose a brother, but you come out back with extra silver. What's going on with your brothers? Why do we keep losing brothers and you keep making money? And here it goes. The man, the Lord of the land, spoke roughly to us and took us to be spies of the land. But we said to him, "We are honest men. We've never been spies. We are 12 brothers, the sons of our father. One is no more. The youngest is this day with our father in the land of Canaan." Then the man, the Lord of the land, said to us, "By this I shall know that you are honest men. Leave one of your brothers with me. Take grain for the famine of your household and go your way." And it's not exactly the way Joseph said it, but it's close. Now this right here, the word in chapter 42:33, it says right here, it says, leave one of your brothers. If you look on the Hebrew on page 6, the first verse is verse 19. That is where we said, "If honest men you are," Joseph says, "of the brothers, one let be confined in the house." And there's the word confined. It's from the word asar. It's right there. It's a built-up word. It's ya-ashar. It means to yoke. He says one of them is going to be yoked, hitched, bound, fastened, gird, harnessed, almost like taken into slavery. I'm going to take this one and hitch him, yoke him. That's the word Joseph uses. But when they say to their father in verse 33, they just soften the word, leave one of your brothers with me, and that word is in a box right below verse 19, it's verse 33, and there it says the word means to deposit, to allow to stay. It's like we're just going to take this as a deposit right here and give him back when Benjamin comes. But that's not what Joseph says. Joseph says this guy's going to go basically into slavery until I see your brother, which I'll never see because you're spies and you're lying to me. But now they tell their father, he just kept him as a deposit until we bring Benjamin. Everything's fine. We just got to show him Benjamin and we get our money back or we get our brother back. And then the man said to them, "Bring your youngest brother to me that I shall know that you are not spies, but honest men, and I will deliver your brother to you, and you shall trade in the land." As they emptied their sacks, behold, every man's bundle of money was in his sack, and when they and their fathers saw their bundles of money, they were afraid. And Jacob sees this, like, oh my gosh, what have you done? And they're like, we don't know what happened. Now, all of them, including Jacob, have experience with lying and telling part of the story and manipulating the situation. So you've got a circle of liars and manipulators looking at each other. It's like, we didn't know this was happening. It's like, that's what I would say if I was lying. And they're trying to look in each other's eyes. Are you lying to me? And they're honestly not. All of them are scared. It looks like a lie, but they've been caught. They've been outplayed, and they're terrified. Then Reuben said to his father. Oh, wait. Chapter 42, verse 36. And Jacob, their father, said to them, "You have bereaved me of my children." Notice plural. Joseph is no more, and Simeon is no more, and now you would take Benjamin. All this has come against me. I'm not sure what you guys are doing, but I've lost Joseph, you've got money. I lose Simeon, you've got money. And now you want Benjamin? What are you going to do with Benjamin? What are you going to get from Benjamin? Then Reuben said to his father, now again, he's the one that tried to deliver Joseph. Reuben said to his father, now again, they're desperate. And we'll laugh at this. You can't understand it. But Joseph's lost one son, two sons, and now he's in a verge of losing a third son. But Reuben's got an answer. If you lose that third son, then do this. Kill my two sons if I do not bring him back to you. You've lost three sons if you lose Benjamin. So I'll pay you back, but you can kill two of your grandchildren. So now you've lost three sons and two grandsons. That should ease your mind. It's like, what are you thinking, Reuben? Again, they're not. They're panicking. If harm should happen to him, Benjamin, on the journey, that you are to make, you would bring down my gray hairs with sorrow to Sheol. Meaning there's nothing that can console me if I lose Benjamin. Chapter 43. Now the famine was severe in the land. Now, so they're just staying home. They're not leaving. They're going to eat their food. Benjamin's staying there. Simeon's in prison. And when they had, now you wonder what's going on with Simeon in prison. Is Joseph sending him extra food? Is Joseph giving him, you know, a nice view from his, you know, what's happening with Simeon? I mean, we don't know. But Joseph's intention is not to torture his brothers. Now the famine was severe in the land. And when they had eaten the grain that they had brought from Egypt, their father said to them, "Go again, buy us a little food. Go, you know, run down to the store and grab us something." But Judah said to him, "The man solemnly warned us, saying, 'You shall not see my face unless your brother is with you. If you will send our brother with us, we will go down and buy you food. But if you will not send him, we will not go down.' For the man said to us, 'You shall not see my face unless your brother is with us.'" In fact, what he said is not just, "You will not see my face, I will kill you if you come back without Benjamin." Israel said, "Why did you treat me so badly as to tell the man that you had another brother?" They replied, "The man questioned us carefully." It was, you know, meaning it was very unusual. It was not your normal transaction. He was getting into family genealogies and asking about our wives and our cousins and our dad. It was strange. I added that part. "About ourselves and our kindred, saying, 'Is your father still alive? Do you have another brother?'" Meaning, we didn't tell him, but he asked about, "Do you have any other brothers?" "Well, yeah, we've got one more." And he was asking very pointed questions. What we told him was in answer to these questions. We didn't give him any more information than he pried out of us. It was very strange. "Could we in any way know that he would say, 'Bring your brother down'?" And Judah said to Israel, his father, "Send the boy with me." Now this is, Reuben had the idea, "If I don't bring him back, kill my two sons." Now Judah steps up with something a little more logical. Judah said to Israel, his father, "Send the boy with me, and we will arise and go, that we may live and not die, both we and you and also our little ones." We either go to Egypt and get food and risk Benjamin, or we all die. "I will be a pledge of his safety. From my hand you shall require him. If I do not bring him back to you and set him before you, then let me bear the blame forever. If we had not delayed, we would now have returned twice." Then their father Israel said, now again, this is during that second year. So I mean, they're having yet food like in a matter of a few months, it would seem. If it must be so, then do this. Take some of the choice fruits of the land in your bags. And how good can those choice fruits be in a time of famine? And carry a present down to the man, a little balm and a little honey, gum, myrrh, pistachio nuts, and almonds. Doesn't sound too bad of a famine's going on right there. Take double the money with you so you can pay back what you stole and pay for the new grain. Carry back with you the money that was returned in the mouth of your sacks. Perhaps it was an oversight. Take also your brother and arise, go again to the man. May God Almighty grant you mercy before the man. Now this is something Jacob didn't say the last time, but this time it's like, okay, now we're in God's hands. May God Almighty grant you mercy before the man, and may he send back your other brother and Benjamin. As for me, if I am bereaved of my children, I am bereaved. We either do this or I die. I'm going to be bereaved and die of a famine, or bereaved and lose another son. Let's do it. So the men took the present, and they took double the money with them, and Benjamin. They arose and went down to Egypt and stood before Joseph. When Joseph saw Benjamin with them, he said to the steward of his house, "Bring the men into the house and slaughter an animal." So he sees that Benjamin's with them. He says, "I'm going to prepare a meal. I'm going to have these men come and eat with me. Make ready, for the men are to dine with me at noon." The man did as Joseph told him. Now, Joseph himself apparently is excited to see his brothers. He's not going to reveal himself. He's going to play the card, but he's going to get together and be able to talk with them and see them. The man did as Joseph told him and brought the men to Joseph's house, and the men were afraid because they're being, now this is in Joseph's house. Joseph wants you in his house. Because they were brought to Joseph's house, and they said, here's their logic. Oh, we get to eat with Joseph. This would be a good time to kind of, you know, talk to him, explain what happened to us. They say, no, it is because of the money which was replaced in our sacks the first time that we are brought in, so that he may assault us and fall upon us and make us servants and seize our donkeys. He's going to bring us in and do exactly what he did with Simeon. He's going to make us his slaves and take our donkeys. Yes, this man, Joseph, that's what he needs. He needs more slaves, and he needs your donkeys. And he's going to do, I guess, what he's going to do it himself, like do some kind of martial arts there with all the brothers in his house. So they went up to the steward of Joseph's house and spoke with him, trying to defuse the situation at the door of the house, and says, "Oh, my Lord, we came down the first time to buy food, and when we came to the lodging place, we opened our sacks, and there was each man's money in the mouth of his sack, our money in full weight. So we have brought it again with us. We brought that money back, and we have brought other money down with us to buy food or buy more food. We do not know who put the money in our sacks." He replied, "Peace to you," meaning relax, take a breath, peace to you. "Do not be afraid. Your God and the God of your father has put treasure in your sacks for you. I received your money." Then he brought Simeon out to them, and when the man had brought the men into Joseph's house and given them water, and they had washed their feet, and when he had given their donkeys fodder, they prepared the present for Joseph's coming at noon. So all the stuff Jacob had sent, they're getting it ready, because Joseph's going to come. He's at work. He's coming home for lunch. For they heard that they should eat bread there. They found out now, oh, we're here not to be beat up. We're here to eat with Joseph, which was, okay, well, we've got a gift for him. Then Joseph came home. They brought into the house to him the present that they had with them and bowed down to him to the ground. Boom, there's the first dream. There's 11 sons bowing down to him. So that is, in a sense, a form of that dream being fulfilled. Now what has to happen, he's got to get the whole family down to bow. And this is not Joseph taking up, this is not Joseph saying, you know, beating his chest, "I'm number one, I'm number one." It's Joseph knowing this is what God wants. You need to be in a position and get your brothers here to bow down, and then you've got to get your family here, or this is what God is doing, and that is in God's plan. And again, imagine all the stuff that Joseph had to endure to get to this point, and now it's a chance for these dreams to be fulfilled. This is God telling him, "This is my plan. You're not going back to Canaan. They're coming to you." And he inquired about their welfare, and says, Is your father well? Remember, once they bow down to him, now the next dream is, I've got to get my father and the household down here. So he asked, how are you doing? And then went right into, now we've got to get the second dream. Is your father well, the old man of whom you spoke? Is he still alive? All these prying questions. They said, your servant, our father, is well. He is still alive. And they bowed their heads and prostrated themselves. And he lifted up his eyes and saw his brother Benjamin, his mother's son, and said, is this your youngest brother of whom you spoke to me? God be gracious to you, my son. Then Joseph hurried out. Again, notice there's no questioning Benjamin, like, okay, what day were you born? Where's your father? You know, keep his favorite possessions, you know, and trying to find out, what's your brother's middle name? You know, do you know your mother's brother's birth date? None of that. Is just like, is this him? God be gracious to you. It's nice to meet you. So, I mean, Joseph knows they're not spies. He's not there to interrogate, but he wants his brother there. For his compassion, okay, then Joseph hurried out, for his compassion grew warm for his brother, and he sought a place to weep. And he entered the, now that'd be strange too, they're all there, and all of a sudden Joseph starts to, you know, get ready to cry, and he gets out like, what's he doing? And he goes off, and they don't know. And no one hears this. No one hears the weeping. In a few moments, everyone's going to hear the weeping. I mean, as this goes. And he entered his chamber and wept there. Then he washed his face, came out, and controlling himself, he says, serve the food. And they served him by himself and them by themselves and the Egyptians who were with him by themselves. So you've got a table, Joseph's table, because he's in charge. He's like Pharaoh. Then there's a table over there for the brothers because they're Hebrews. And then there's a table over here for his staff, all of the Egyptians that are eating with him. Because Egyptians could not eat with the Hebrews, for that is an abomination to the Egyptians. So he's still playing the image, playing the role of I'm an Egyptian. And they set before him the firstborn according to his birthright, and the youngest according to his youth. And the men looked at one another in amazement as they sat. Reuben sat here, Simeon, Levi, Judah, all the way down, and Benjamin at the end. It's like, sure, he knew who Benjamin was, but how did he know who the oldest was and all these things? And so they were amazed. And they sat before him, the firstborn according to his birthright and the youngest according to his youth, and the men looked at one another in amazement. Portions were taken to them from Joseph's table, but Benjamin's portion was five times as much as any of theirs, and they drank and were merry with him. Several, many strange things are happening, but yay, this was a good day. Then he commanded the steward of the house, fill them in sacks with food as much as they can carry, and put each man's money in the mouth of his sack, again, and put my cup, the silver cup, in the mouth of the sack of the youngest. He's got a special silver cup that was sitting probably prominent, like a display there on the table, like some kind of flower arrangement. But it's probably right there prominent. They were looking at it the whole time, and he's probably drinking out of it or some special cup. Put this cup in Benjamin's bag with his money for the grain. And he did, as Joseph told him. As soon as morning was light, the men were sent away with their donkeys. They had gone only a short distance. Joseph doesn't let them get very far, just enough to get gone, so that they are on their way home, and they think the event is over, a short distance from the city. Now Joseph said to his steward, up, follow after the men, and when you overtake them, say to them, why have you repaid evil for good? Is it not from this that my Lord drinks, and by this that he practices divination? You have done evil in doing this. And so the guy's going, okay, well, what am I saying? It's like, they've taken something from me, and you say, this is an important item. And they're like, what item is it? When he overtook them, he spoke to them these words. They said to him, why does my Lord speak such words as these? Far be it from your servants to do such a thing. Seriously, we're just glad to be alive. And now they're going to get Benjamin back home, Simeon back home. They got food. Dad will relax. Behold, the money that we found in the mouths of our sacks, we brought back to you from the land of Canaan. I mean, we brought back money that we thought had been mistakenly, that we maybe you thought we stole. We brought that back. Why would we come back, bring back money we thought was possibly stolen, and then steal something? How then could we send silver or steal silver or gold from your Lord's house. Whichever of your servants is found, I mean, they're so confident, that's ridiculous. Whichever of your servants is found with it shall die, and we also will be the Lord's servants. Whoever has it, they'll be killed, and we'll all go back and be servants. We'll be your slaves. He says, let it be as you say. He who is found with it shall be my servant, and the rest of you shall be innocent. So they down, it's not where, they say, kill the one who has it, and we'll be your servants. They say, okay, we'll negotiate. He'll be our servant, and the rest of you can go your way. Then each man quickly lowered his sack to the ground, and each man opened his sack. And he searched, beginning with the eldest. They're still playing that card of who's they start with: Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah. See, they've gone through all the bad boys. And ending up with the youngest, they're 10 for 10, no cup. And now they all they got is Benjamin. And the cup was found in Benjamin's sack. Then they tore their clothes, and every man loaded his donkey, and they returned to the city. They don't say, well, take Benjamin, we'll go on home. They all packed up, they're all going back with Benjamin. We can't go home without Benjamin. When Judah and his brothers came to Joseph's house, he was still there. They fell before him to the ground. Joseph said to them, what deed is this that you have done? Do you not know that a man like me can indeed practice divination? Now, I don't think you know, this isn't saying Joseph practiced divination or Joseph is into witchcraft and Egyptian sorcery. It's saying Joseph says, don't you know this? It's probably, I'd be confident that he's not an Egyptian, but he says, I am an Egyptian. He's got several things. He says, you're spies, and he knows they're not spies. He knows they're here for food. He knows these things, and he knows he doesn't practice sorcery. But he's saying he's an Egyptian. He's saying they're spies, and he's saying, how do you think I know all these things? I practice divination, and I use this cup. Part of my power comes from this cup, and you've taken something so valuable from me that this is the source of my powers, and you took it from me. Meaning, how vengeful could he be now? Do you not know that a man like me can indeed practice divination? And I don't think he does. He's just playing that part. And Judah says, what shall we say to my Lord? What shall we speak? Or how can we clear ourselves? God has found out the guilt of your servants. Behold, we are my Lord's servants, both we and he also, in whose hand the cup has been found. Now notice right there, the Lord has found out. It's been exposed. Why are they evil men? They just got in saying we're honest men. What crime are they thinking of? They've got to be thinking of what they did last time, 22 years ago, when we sold our brother into slavery. And it's been exposed. Now it's our turn. Now it's our turn to go into slavery. That's the only way we're going to resolve this. We sold him into slavery. Now it's our turn for slavery. That's the only way this story ends. But he said, far be it from me that I should do so. Only the man in whose hand the cup was found shall be my servant. But as for you, go in peace. Hey, go back to your father in peace. You've done it before. You've lost a brother and gone back to your father in peace. Heck, do it again. I'll just keep him, and you go back and tell your father, we've lost another one. Go ahead and tell him he got torn up by wild animals, maybe. You want a bloody coat for it? He doesn't say he said that, but boy, he could have been pushing the envelope. And he is right here. Oh, it's not a problem, guys. Just go in peace. Relax. I'm not going to do anything with you guys. I'll just keep this youngest son and go tell your father and go in peace. It'll all be fine. Then Judah went up to him and says, oh, my Lord, please let your servant speak a word in my Lord's ears, and let not your anger burn against your servant, for you are like Pharaoh himself. My Lord asked his servants, saying, have you a father or a brother? And we said to my Lord, we have a father, an old man, and a young brother, the child of his old age. His brother is dead, and he alone is left of his mother's children, and his father loves him. Then you said, so he's getting all, I mean, he got all kind of details from the family. He's asking about who was his brother and who was the mother, and they're telling him all these things. And they're saying, this is what we told you. And they're telling him basically what he knows. And you said, bring him down to me that I may see, set my eyes on him, And we said to my Lord, the boy cannot leave his father, for if he should leave his father would die. Then you said to your servants, unless your youngest brother comes down with you, you shall not see my face again. When we went back to your servant, my father, we told him the words of my Lord. And when our father says, go again, buy us a little food, we said, we cannot go down. If our youngest brother goes with us, then we'll go down. For we cannot see the man's face unless our youngest brother is with us. Then your servant, my father, says to us, you know that my wife bore me two sons. One left me, and I said, surely he has been torn to pieces, and I have never seen him since. If you take this one also from me, and harm happens to him, you shall bring down my gray hairs in evil to Sheol. So this story still is burning in their conscience. Now therefore, as soon as I come to your servant my father, and the boy is not with us, then as his life is bound up in the boy's life, as soon as he sees that the boy, Benjamin, is not with us, he will die. And your servants will bring down his gray hairs of your servant, our father, with sorrow to Sheol. For your servant became a pledge of safety. Your servant, I, Judah, became a pledge of safety for the boy, Benjamin, to my father, saying, if I do not bring him back to you, then I shall bear the blame before my father all my life. Now therefore, please, let your servant remain. Let me remain instead of the boy Benjamin as a servant to my Lord. I will be your slave. Let Benjamin go and spare my father the grief. He's already lost one son. For how can I go back to my father if the boy is not with me? I fear to see the evil that would find my father. It'd be better for me to stay here and pay the price than to go back and watch my father suffer. Chapter 45, then Joseph could not control himself. Before all those who stood by him, he cried, make everyone go out from me. Now this is, Joseph is now breaking character with his brothers, and also the Egyptians have never seen Joseph act like this. He controls the whole land. No one does anything without his permission. And now all of a sudden, he's broken. He says, everyone get out. And what he's referring to is the Egyptians and anyone but his brothers. So no one stayed with him when Joseph made himself known to his brothers. Now here's one of the greatest parts of the Bible. I mean, every time I read this, it's like, I mean, especially the way it's been built up, and they've been going back and forth from Canaan, and he's been accusing him of spies, and he's been saying, yeah, I'm going to kill you, and I'm going to keep, and he knows all these details. They have no idea. He's shaved like an Egyptian. He's got hair like an Egyptian. He's got, if Egyptians had hair, I just said he's shaved and he got hair. It's kind of an oxymoron, not contradiction. But they see this Egyptian, and all of a sudden this Egyptian is going to say, I'm Joseph. And it's like, oh, you kind of look like him. They're like, I mean, they have no place to put this information. Joseph's been dead for 22 years. They've been talking about it. They'd sit out and watch the sheep, and they talk about, how's you feel? I dream about it every night. And they think about this all the time. I'm making that up. But all of a sudden, Joseph is saying, I am Joseph. It's like, how do you even, we haven't even said his name. No one said his name for 22 years. And he wept aloud so that the Egyptians heard it. See, the first time when he saw Ben, he wept earlier in the day. He wept, went off and washed his face in his own room, came back, kept his composure. But here, he's weeping so loud that the Egyptian heard it and the household of Pharaoh heard it. And Joseph said to his brothers, I am Joseph. Is my father still alive? Now you can see he's emotionally into this. He's completely broken down because is my father still alive? Yes, we've been talking about him for the last 20 minutes. I am Joseph. Is my father still alive? But his brothers could not answer him, for they were dismayed at his presence. I mean, they have no way to where to put this information. They're just standing there. Once again, like Jacob had said, just staring at each other. Why are you just stay looking? We don't know what to do. We don't know how to process this. In fact, they're processing. So Joseph said to his brothers, come near to me, please. And they came near. And he said, I am your brother Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt. And now do not be dismayed or angry with yourselves because you sold me here, for God sent me before you to preserve life. Interesting. You didn't sell. Don't blame yourself. It could have happened unless God wanted it to happen. I mean, what a bold way to live a life. It's like, don't blame yourself. You could have done it unless God allowed it to happen. And God meant it for good. For the famine has been in the land for these, notice, these 2 years. And they've already been to Egypt now the second time. And there are yet 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvest. And God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant on earth, part of the Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. Now he's coming back to Abraham, Isaac. Remember, I forgot my father's household. That's what Manasseh means. And now he's coming back. It's like, wait a minute, those dreams. I'm here to preserve the covenant, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to preserve a remnant of that to fulfill this. This is where we're at. This is him doing eschatology. Now, you're trying to figure out eschatology. What happens next? Where are we at in this? This is Joseph, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. It's never going to happen. I'm a slave. It's never going to. I'm not part of it. I've forgotten all about it. All of a sudden, you're ready. Wait. It's happening right in front of my eyes. The prophecies happened. They all bowed down to me. This is God fulfilling the Abrahamic covenant. Up to the now, there's a whole lot of things yet to take place in Joseph's day and in our day, but this is as far as they were. And to keep alive for you many survivors. So it was not you who sent me here, but God. Now, again, I'm not talking to you, I'm talking to me. When I can say that to people that have caused me harm, caused me difficulties, you're starting to show signs of maturity. You're starting to show signs of actual faith. So it was not you who sent me here, but God. And so now your problem is if you're bitter and angry, you're bitter and angry at God. And say, well, I'm bitter and angry at this person, but not God. But that person couldn't have done it unless God let them happen. So if you're bitter and angry at them, guess who you're bitter and angry at? God who let it happen. It's like, so I better just trust God. He has made me father to Pharaoh. Now, father to Pharaoh doesn't mean I'm his supervisor or I'm above him. It means I'm like Pharaoh's like my child, and I'll do anything like a father will to help his child succeed. That's what it's not father, I'm in charge of Pharaoh, but like a father serving a son, whatever he needs, I will provide it so he can do his job. So I'm like a father to Pharaoh and lord of all his house and ruler over all the land of Egypt. Hurry and go up to my father and say to him, thus says your son Joseph, God has made me Lord of all Egypt. Come down to me. Do not tarry. You shall dwell in the land of Goshen. You can see it on the map. And he's already got a place planned out for him. You shall be near me. Now, does that mean Joseph's near Goshen at that time? Or at least near in Egypt? So again, now you got to decide what is near me. Does that mean Joseph's, you know, right there in Goshen at that time? I don't think so, but if you do, that's fine. You shall be near me, and you and your children and your children's children and your flocks. Notice you and your children and your children's children. I mean, it's talking about this is going to be going on. And your flocks, your herds, and all that you have. Bring the whole household, the sun, the moon, the stars. Bring a flocks. Everybody's going to come here and bow down to me. Not because I'm number one, but because I've been sent here by God to prepare this place for you. And you're going to come down and bow down to God's will in this place. There I will provide for you, for there are yet 5 years of famine to come, so that you and your household and all that you have do not come to poverty. Come down here. And now if you stay, you're going to perish up in Canaan. And now your eyes see, and your eyes of my brother Benjamin see, that it is my mouth that speaks you. What does he mean, my mouth? He's no longer speaking Egyptian. He's speaking their language. And all of a sudden this Egyptian starts talking in Hebrew, saying he's Joseph, loses the accent and amazes him. You must tell my father all of my honor in Egypt and all that you have seen. Hurry and bring my father down here. Then he fell upon his brother Benjamin's neck and wept. And Benjamin wept upon his neck, and he kissed all of his brothers and wept upon them. After that, his brothers talked with him. Again, what kind of a conversation would that have been? When the report was heard in Pharaoh's house, Joseph's brothers have come, it pleased Pharaoh and his servants. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, say to your brothers, do this, load your beast and go back to the land of Canaan and take your father and your households and come to me. That means all their wives, all their children, all their sons' wives. And I will give you the best of the land of Egypt, and you shall eat the fat of the land. And you, Joseph, are commanded to say, do this. You, Joseph, he's I'm giving you commission. You tell them, you take wagons, you take Egyptian wagons from the land of Egypt for your little ones and for your wives, and bring your father and come. Have no concern for your goods, for the best of all the land of Egypt is yours. We're going to send you Egyptian U-Hauls, and you take whatever you need, but you leave stuff there because you've got everything here. The sons of Israel did go. The wagons are for, again, I said U-Hauls. The wagons are for the people to travel in. There would be more like, charter buses, because you're supposed to, they're not sending charter buses and U-Hauls. They're sending charter buses for the people, the children, and their wives to travel in. But leave your stuff there. We're not sending U-Hauls because we've got everything that you've got there. It's 10 times better here. The sons of Israel did so, and Joseph gave them wagons according to the command of Pharaoh, and gave them provisions for the journey. To each and all of them he gave a change of clothes, but to Benjamin he gave 300 shekels of silver and 5 changes of clothes. To his father he sent as follows. This is what he sends Jacob. 10 donkeys loaded with the good things of Egypt, and 10 female donkeys loaded with grain and bread and provisions for his father on the journey. Then he sent his brothers away, and as they departed, he said to them, "Do not quarrel on the way. We are so close." Now again, you could be that, I've read that before, like he's one, sarcastic parting comment. I know how you guys are. Don't quarrel on the way. And maybe he meant it as a little punchline to end the scene, little punchline by Joseph, end scene. Or he meant, listen, I know you guys, don't quarrel on the way. Just go and do these things. We're so close to fulfilling God's plan. Don't screw it up. I'll read what it says. Then he sent his brothers away, and as they departed, he said to them, "Do not quarrel on the way." You can provide the tone. How did he say it? So they went up out of Egypt and came to the land of Canaan to their father Jacob, and they told him, "Joseph is still alive, and he is ruler over all the..." Now this is Jacob hearing this for the first time, 22 years. Last he knew, Joseph was torn by a wild animal, and he's been grieving the whole time. Now they come, they say, "Joseph is still alive." That was not what was on Jacob's radar that day. He just wanted to make sure Benjamin came back. "Joseph is still alive, and he is ruler over all the land of Egypt." And his heart became numb. Obviously, like, stunned, numb, for he did not believe them. But when they told him all the words of Joseph, meaning he's saying things that only Joseph would know, which he had said to them, and when he saw the wagons, again, the charter buses, that Joseph had sent to carry him, and the spirit of their father, Jacob, was revived. And Israel said, now notice, and Jacob was revived, and Israel said, notice how his name, Jacob, has now become Israel again. I mean, just right there in the text, the narrator. And Jacob was revived, and Israel said. I mean, he's back on track. "It is enough. Joseph, my son, is still alive. I will go and see him before I die." Just going to read 5 or 6 verses, and I'm done. So Israel, see, notice that switch, Jacob, 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 Jacob. Joseph's back on the scene. Israel's back in faith. Now watch this. "So Israel took his journey with all that he had and came to Beersheba." And I put that on the map, just going from Hebron south, west through Beersheba. And that's where Beersheba, you know what Beersheba refers to, the Hebrew meaning. And that's where Isaac had dug the wells. Jacob dug a well in Shechem. You can still see it today. I've seen the well in Beersheba that Isaac dug, and other things, other wells that were dug. "Came to Beersheba and offered sacrifice." So he goes to Beersheba, where Isaac, his father, was from, offered sacrifices to God of his father, Isaac, because that's where Isaac was, had lived. "And God spoke to Israel in visions of the night and said," so he offers sacrifices, renews the covenant in a sense, comes back to his father's God there. "And God comes to him in the night and says, 'Jacob, Jacob.' And he says, 'Here I am.' Then he says, 'I am God, the God of your father. Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt, for there I will make you into a great nation. I myself will go down with you to Egypt, and I will also bring you up again, and Joseph's hand shall close your eyes.' Then Jacob set out from Beersheba," after he had the offering and the vision from God, or the sacrifice and the vision from God, the sons of Israel carried Jacob, their father, their little ones, and their wives in the wagons, in the charter buses that Pharaoh had sent to carry him. They also took their livestock and their goods, which they had gained in the land of Canaan, and came into Egypt, Jacob and all his offspring with him, his sons' sons with him, his daughters and his sons' daughters, all his offspring he brought with them into Egypt. So right there, anyone who is from Jacob, from Israel, is going to Egypt. They didn't leave behind, you know, the house of Simeon or the house of Levi or Levi's grandchildren. All the sons and all their wives and their children, everyone comes. And all his offspring he brought with him into Egypt. And like the prophecy given to Abraham, they're going to be there for 400 years. Now chapter 46, verse 8. Now these are the names of the descendants of Israel. And now you get a list. There's your genealogy, a listing, everybody that went. And that takes us up through chapter 45, the first verse of chapter 46. I'll pray. And we'll be done. Father, do thank you for your faithfulness. We thank you for giving Joseph and other people the patience, the endurance, the character to fulfill your will. We ask that we ourselves might participate in that same grace, that same spirit of being able to endure, to persevere, and accomplish the things you've called us to. We do thank you for your faithfulness to us. We do ask that we'd continue to walk in your ways and do the things you've called us to. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Thank you for your patience. Any thoughts?